Touchdowns podcast, something we're going to be doing a little bit differently regards to horse racing and also NFL. We'll be switching it up, interchanging it week by week. But for the first podcast, we'll be doing horse racing and NFL, focusing mainly on the Kentucky Derby and the US action. My name's Luke Elder. Joining me is Tom Collins. Tom, how are you? I'm excited for this, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I'm excited too, launching this new podcast. Hopefully everyone at home will enjoy it. And we're covering two major sports in the US, one that everyone will know about in the NFL, which is becoming a global sport now, and horse racing, which, you know, is quite of a niche sport, but that's where our specialities lie. So I'm looking forward to it. I have to say, though, I must be a glutton for punishment. Not only do I have to work with you on Sky Sports Racing, but I'm alongside you here on the Turf and Touchdowns podcast as well. I mean, I must just love this abuse I'm about to get.
That's where we sort of started. Because a little while ago, we thought, we should do something else work-wise. And it's been a long time in the making, to be fair, through many multiple reasons. But if you don't know who I am, my name's Luke Elder. I work with Tom Collins on Sky Sports Racing. That's how we sort of know each other. And we've got the US angle. But it just so happens that we're both NFL fans as well. One of us has got slightly better taste than the other one. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But we thought we'd set this up. We try and take you through as many US racing angles as we possibly can. And what better place to start with the Kentucky Derby, Tom? This is not a coincidence that we're starting off at this sort of point. We're a couple of days before the 150th running, and it looks an absolute belter of a race with Fierceness and Sierra Leone the likely market leaders.
Yeah, this is the perfect time to launch the podcast. As you say, we've got the Kentucky Derby, which we'll talk about in 2 seconds, and obviously the NFL draft. And it's just been an amazing week in US sport in general. So why not kickstart with a bang? And this is it, the Kentucky Derby, 150th running, as you say, a landmark renewal. Fierceness, Sierra Leone, your two favourites. It's an interesting race. It's a race that we have both been looking at for months and months, trying to decipher one, who's going to be favourite, two, who the best bets are, three, who's going to win the race. Hopefully, we've come down on a selection or two that may go close at good prices, but I'm really looking forward to previewing it. The market suggests there's two horses to focus on with Sierra Leone and Fierceness, as we've said, but it might be a little bit more wide open than that.
Yeah, well, the draw blew the race entirely wide open. Just before we dive properly into the Kentucky Derby as well, you can follow us on our socials on Twitter or X, however modern you may well be. We are at Turf Touchdowns on pretty much any other social media platform, TikTok, Instagram, Threads, at Turf and Touchdowns is where you will find us. Come say hi. And if you enjoy this podcast as well, do give us a positive rating. If you didn't enjoy it, don't tell us anything. We don't mind regarding that. But into the Kentucky Derby, we mentioned the draw. It's not been kind to Sierra Leone. He's a hold-up performer. He's jumping from stall two. That is quite problematic for a horse like him.
Yeah, races, especially the Kentucky Derby with a maximum field of 20 runners, can be lost at the start. They can't be won at the start, but they can be lost. And when a horse is drawn in stall one or two, bearing in mind the whole field congregate across towards the rail to get a good position and save ground on the turns, if you're drawn in one or two and you miss this start, you're going to be stuck in behind horses. You're going to be getting dirt kicked back in your face. You may have to negotiate around beaten horses late on. You may encounter traffic problems. And the fact that Sierra Leone, who is a closer, will come from the back of the pack, has drawn stall two, has to be considered a big negative. And actually, the last horse to win from stall two was back in 1978, a horse called Affirmed. So if Sierra Leone is to justify favouritism in the UK market currently, it's going to have to overcome that trend.
He is. However, there is a stall worse than that. And when the draw came out for Fierceness, it was, oh my God, it's stall 17. He can't possibly win. Technically, Tom, with Encino coming out, he's now stall 16. But historically, it's about the number because no horse has ever won the Kentucky Derby from stall 17. So Fierceness is going to have to do something that no other horse officially has ever done.
Yeah, exactly. Stall 17 is 0 from 44. And as you say, technically he's actually in 16, so that stat won't be boosted necessarily this year, but he is still wearing the 17 number cloth. I think that's crucial to say. Importantly, the 0 from 44 suggests that because it's a wide stall, these horses that are drawn in that gate cannot win. However, horses have won from 18 19 20 and 21. It may just be a fact that the best horse has never been drawn in 17. We'll soon find out. I do think it's a relative positive for him. You know, he's a forward-going type. If you're drawn inside and you miss it, or there's a bit of interference, you can find yourself in a poor position. So for a horse like Fierceness, who wants to go to the front, it could be a positive. But the stats don't lie, and they suggest it's not the ideal post.
It's a long run as well to the first bend. You've got the entirety of the Churchill Downs stretch. Fierceness is going to have a bit of time to get over, but big concerns for Fierceness. Between us two, I don't have any sort of doubt he's the best horse in the race from a pure talent perspective. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, 100%. He's definitely the best horse in the race. I mean, if he turns up on his A day, producing his A game, and he doesn't have any interference early, I expect him to win. That's why he's a short price. Mm-hmm. However, he's not guaranteed to get all of those factors going his way.
No. At Gulfstream last time around in the Florida Derby, he was absolutely sensational and by far the best trial run for Churchill Downs. However, he got on the front end that day. Everything that was expected to run well also bombed out entirely, just didn't run their race at all. So it was made a little bit easier for him on that regard. He's also not going to get to the front in this. You can try and pick your way through and find a few front runners. There might not be as many as normal, but it's a Kentucky Derby. The last 20 years, I think it is, they've not gone above 47 seconds for the opening half a mile. A lot of the time they venture into the 45 second bracket, which, I mean, you've got no chance. If you go that fast and you're on the pace, you're done.
Yeah, exactly. This is a horse who, if you look back through his CV, he's only had 5 starts, he's won 3 times. Those 3 victories after the opening 2 furlongs or quarter, if you want to use the American terminology, he's been either first or second. In the 2 defeats, he was in 6th in the Champagne after the first 2 furlongs, and he was 3rd in the Holy Bull. So when he's further back in the field, he generally fails to produce. Now, this is a big question because, as you say, he's not going to be on the lead. Like, he has early speed, but surely he's not going to be ridden that aggressively to be in front of the likes of Just a Touch and T.O. Password, who are out and out blazing speeds. Mm-hmm. I think at 5-2, 3-1, 9-4, whatever price he is currently, that's got to be your main issue. If he does break and he sits perfectly in 3rd, you'll be laughing at the halfway point. He has gone quick through the first half in the past. If you look back to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, he went 46 and change. If you look back to the Champagne, they went 45 and change. So he can go quick in the early stages. It just depends whether he's going to be 3-4 wide and if he's actually going to be able to get that post that position up front anyway.
The one thing I will say, Breeders' Cup, there was a massive pace bias on the front end. Both himself and Muth went forward, and anything behind, I mean, we both bet Locked on the day. Locked had zero chance from where he was. We'll see how things go at Churchill. But you mentioned the Japanese runners. Historically, they go quite hard in Kentucky Derbies, and they've been the culprit a lot of the times for going maybe a touch too quickly. We'll bring Forever Young into the equation because he's got the most fascinating profile. The one thing we do know is that Japan, Tom, are absolutely desperate to win every big race going in America, in particular this one.
Yeah, exactly. They've had success in the past in the Breeders' Cup a couple of years ago with a couple of big shocks. And they're looking to win the Kentucky Derby. I mean, they've run some good horses here, Derma Sotogake being one. He's subsequently proven himself to be a proper grade one contender. But I undoubtedly believe that Forever Young is the best horse they've ever run in this race. The question for him is how much kickback is he going to take in the early stages? If you go back and watch his Saudi Derby race, he broke very awkwardly. That left him on the back foot, that left him 4 wide on the turn, and he took a lot of kickback, albeit in a small field. Still won that event though. Then you look at Maidan, UAE Derby, he had a much better run through the race and powered clear. Quite clearly has a lot of talent, will definitely stay the trip, but if he's very far back from his middle draw, that could be the issue.
Yeah, he's drawn stall 11, which, say, it is not too problematic, but we will see. One thing we'll mention as well, just from our UK side of things, Frankie Dettori, Ben Curtis and Adam Baskitza now all get rides in the big race. I mean, if you'd have told me 2 years ago Ben Curtis would be riding in the Kentucky Derby, I'd have given you a funny look, but he's been brilliant since going over to the US, generally at the fairgrounds. But it's good to see international flavour extending beyond the Japanese runners.
Yeah, absolutely. Ben Curtis is a great story. You know, he was a good jockey over here in the UK when he was riding here consistently. But since he's gone to the US, he's really found his niche and he's one of the strongest pilots over there. There's no doubt about it. Frankie Dettori, I think, would have been on one of the market leaders had Bob Baffert been able to have a runner in the race. Unfortunately, for his case, Bob Baffert is not able to run and therefore he's on a rank outsider. So it doesn't look like the fairy tale Kentucky Derby for Frankie, but it's great just to see him in the lineup.
Also about Ben Curtis, very polite.
He is.
That's all I've got.
Unlike myself.
I'm pretty sure he has no idea who I am. But when a few years ago, we owned a horse in England called Kibar. And just when walking the track, he'd always say hi. But I'm pretty sure he was just saying hi to everybody. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. To be fair, I've got a similar story. It's very boring. I'm not going to bore everyone about it, but there's a jockey in Saudi Arabia called Camilo Ospina, arguably the best in Saudi, and he's very polite. And you know when a jockey's polite, you just want them to have success, don't you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%. Good luck, Frankie, over at Churchill Downs. Any outsiders or long shots that you want to bring into the mix?
Sure. I mean, we've discussed three horses, all of whom have good chances of winning on form, all of whom I will not be cheering on. I'm going to have a bet on three horses in the field. Mystic Dan at a huge price, just in case the rain on Friday does materialise and it becomes a sloppy surface. Nevertheless, he still ran well last time up. He's a deep closer and has drawn inside, so he should get the race panned out to suit if he's capable of running home strongly to pick up a place. And then my two most important bets are both Brad Cox trainees. Catching Freedom, which I'll let you talk about in 2 seconds, mm-hmm. but I think he's going to get a good run through and his form stacks up well with the market protagonists. And Just a Touch. Now, the point with Just a Touch, one, I don't like him over this trip, to be honest. And two, his form isn't the best. However, leading connections, only had three starts, and is sure to be on the front end. That is the key. This is a race that will go towards horses who are prominent. It has done virtually every year. Now, I know closers like Rich Strike have won it, but at the same time, that's because the pace was so quick. I don't think they're going to go just as hard this time around. And if you've watched Churchill this week, they have made that course rapid. If you're not in the front two or three coming into the home turn, you can't win. So I'll take a chance on Just a Touch because he should be in that prominent position.
As you're listening to this as well, please do monitor the weather over in Louisville, Kentucky, where Churchill Downs is situated, because we are expecting a bit of rain. We're not sure how much. It's changing pretty much every single day. So go onto your weather apps, type in Louisville, Kentucky, just see what it's doing. One thing I will say as well, Churchill's one of the fastest drying tracks in the world, never mind in the US, so that can change. But regarding Catching Freedom, I like him at a price. I think he's very much live. Flavian Pratt taking the ride. I thought he was good last time around, winning over at the fairgrounds in the Louisiana Derby. Came from a fair way back on that occasion. Beat Honor Marie. Tuscan Gold was in there as well. You look back at the Sierra Leone form, that's not too bad on a wet track. I would much rather it be a fast surface. A wet track would favour Sierra Leone quite heavily. But I do think at the prices, he's one that's not been forgotten about, but overlooked a little bit. I think because he's been beaten by Sierra Leone before when conditions weren't really in his favour. I think he's been sort of pushed back a touch. I think he's very much in England and each way play in America, win, play, show play. So he would be a look in for me. Just one more thing before we move on to NFL chat.
Hit me.
A while ago, Tom, well, I say a while ago, this is little after the Breeders' Cup, so turn of the year, Tom goes to me, I've bet two horses for the Kentucky Derby. I can't remember what the other one was, but one of them was Dornock, who's currently 33-1. What price you got?
I've got just over 33-1, so it's nothing to really shout about. But what I will say is at least we've got a horse in the race. The other one was Locked, who unfortunately has been able to, well, been forced to bypass the race. He looked like a proper Kentucky Derby player last year when he finished really strongly in the juvenile, but that ticket's in the bin. What I will say on Dornock, I hate the draw. I don't really like that he's going to push forward. But, you know, this is a horse with lots of talent. If he got an easy way up front, which he won't, then he would be a player. But I think it might be a little bit too much in the Derby this year for him. I'm happy with the price. It's only a smallish bet. So, yeah, it's difficult to get those anti-post tickets up, isn't it?
It is. It is. A lot of bookmakers over here wouldn't offer anti-post markets for the Kentucky Derby either, which makes it even more problematic. But there is also a big meeting at Churchill on Friday. That's the Kentucky Oaks. If you are wanting any sort of build-up towards the Kentucky Oaks, join myself and Tom on Sky Sports Racing at 4:15. No, channel number is 415. We'll be on from about 5 o'clock together. That's yet to be finalised, but it'll be around about 5 o'clock. We'll be doing all the build-up towards the Kentucky Derby until about 9:30.
Yeah, I think I'm on till 9:15. You're on for a little bit longer until, you know, Sky Sports Racing takes the live NBC.
That's
feed,
news but to me. I have no idea. No one tells me anything. I have no idea. Like, all I know is I'm turning up to work with you. That's all I got.
Yeah, exactly. And you are buzzing for it as well.
Yeah. as we mentioned at the top of the show, this podcast is going to be a podcast we try and incorporate different sports into, the main two being horse racing and also the NFL. So we'll change tact, we'll move towards the NFL. As I say, there will be specialized NFL podcasts in the near future, and there'll be specialized horse racing podcasts. Very rarely will those two merge, but for the first one, we thought we'd do exactly that. The NFL draft is not that long ago. It feels like an absolute age ago, but we had plenty of shocks, plenty of things that we expected to happen. We'll start off with the shocks. First shock is that we're both wearing our team's hoodies.
Well, you've got to on the first podcast. You've got to know, you've got to tell the reader or the watcher exactly where our allegiance lies. Mine lies with the Packers, go Pack, go. Yours lies with the disgusting Seahawks.
I'm going down a bit more now. I'm going a bit. Favorite Seahawk memory, you ask? Very good question. Very good question, Tom Collins. Do you remember when the refs had a bit of a tantrum?
Well, I mean, it happens most games.
And the replacement referees came in.
No, I don't remember that.
That was just a really good Seahawks-Packers game. Really good Seahawks-Packers game. Let's go on to the actual shocks and stop making it all about us. Biggest shock, and I still don't really get it, is that the Atlanta Falcons gave Kirk Cousins a $180 million contract. I think $100 million guaranteed to get him away from Minnesota. You're thinking, great, they've got their guy. He's off the back of an Achilles injury. Then at 8, they go and draft Michael Penix, which is above where he was going to be drafted anyway. We were expecting him to go to probably the Raiders, maybe the Broncos, but then the Falcons step in and they don't tell Kirk Cousins they're going to take Michael Penix, but they do anyway, which I just found very, very weird.
Yeah, it was very much an Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love situation, but just hyped up because of the
not pick. Making it all about the Packers. Like, we're past it. We've done it. We've passed it.
It's what I do. Yeah, it was very much that situation. And I think Kirk Cousins would have had a similar approach to the decision as Aaron Rodgers did when Packers drafted Love. He probably wasn't too happy. Despite that, he has got $100 million guaranteed in his contract. So at the same time, he knows he's going to be the starter this year, injuries aside, and he's probably going to be the starter next year before then they move towards Penix. Is an early pick to burn on a QB for 3 years' time, don't you think?
It's a very early pick. I feel sorry for Michael Penix, to be honest, because he's a guy that's a little bit older coming into the league. He's a guy that's ready to start as well.
Yep.
It just doesn't make a great deal of sense. I think Atlanta fans are kind of annoyed as well. I know last year they took Bijan Robinson. It's early to take running backs in an NFL draft. We've learned that in recent years. Bijan Robinson, he looks a fantastic pick, even though they didn't use him properly last year. But this one just looks an odd one. I thought it was funny as well that Kirk Cousins was once this guy. He was Michael Penix because Washington, they drafted RG3. Then I think round 4 in the same draft, they took Kirk Cousins, who would go on to take over from RG3. When he had a few injury issues. The sort of domino effect meant that the Raiders couldn't take Michael Penix, and in the end, they couldn't take a quarterback whatsoever. So they took Brock Bowers, which is fine for them. But me and Tom were very keen on Brock Bowers going top 10.
We're in mourning. We are in mourning still from this NFL draft. It's been a week, literally today. We're recording on Thursday, May the 2nd. So it's been a week since it happened. I'm still not over it, are you? I mean, I've got three admissions to make about the draft. One, I watched rounds 1 to 6, didn't watch round 7 this year, which is maybe me forgetting about all sleepers in the NFL. Two, Brock Bowers not going in the first 10 selections ruined the whole of rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 for me. I mean, I lost interest, I have to say. I was just looking at the Packers picks and mourning this brilliant bet that we had that didn't come off. And number three, Detroit fans actually came out in force. And it's very hard for me to admit that as a Packers fan, but it was probably the best attended NFL draft I've ever seen. So there were a couple of positives.
Would you say that Detroit fans are better than Packers fans?
Obviously, I wouldn't say that. I do want to say Detroit are my favorite of the NFC North teams, aside from the Packers. I mean, Vikings and Bears, they can go. But
that's not much to say.
Well, you know, I just want to let people know, the Detroit fans out there who are watching this, I don't mind you guys. Especially the draft, like that turnout was super. That made the draft a little bit more of a spectacle, and I did enjoy that. But back to Bowers, I mean, yeah, it wasn't ideal, was it?
No, and he's gone and joined Michael Mayer, who the Raiders drafted last year. So we'll see how things go regarding that. The coaching staff at the Raiders have come out and said, well, you can play two tight ends at the same time. It's like, yeah, we know that, but you've now got two pretty good ones. So from a fantasy perspective, Brock Bowers, question marks regarding that. Any other shocks that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I think my biggest shock, aside from Michael Penix, who we've already talked about, is the fact that Buffalo traded down from pick 28 to actually go to 32. Then they subsequently traded that for 33 and they picked up Keon Coleman. Now, I don't necessarily mind the Keon Coleman selection. You know, he's going to be their wide receiver one now that Gabe Davis has gone and whatnot. I think he's going to get a lot of target share. But when trading pick 28, they allowed the Kansas City Chiefs to trade up. And when Kansas traded up, they selected Xavier Worthy, who is the quickest man ever in the history of the NFL combine to run the 40-yard dash. So what you're doing is you're allowing a major player for the Super Bowl next year and for the foreseeable future, as long as they've got Patrick Mahomes, to pick up the fastest guy that's ever played in the league when Buffalo could have taken him, or at least stopped Kansas from taking him. I think that was a bit of a dodgy move from Buffalo's side of things, but probably was a positive when it comes to Xavier Worthy.
We'll get to Xavier Worthy in a moment, because he's going to be mentioned a little bit later on. The thing that does tell me is that they were going to take Keon Coleman anyway.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, on the board, you still had Ladd McConkey, you still had Troy Franklin, you still had a whole host of guys that could have gone as one of the earlier outside the top three big wide receivers. But the fact they were willing to trade back is that they're going, well, we know that the Chiefs aren't going to take Keon Coleman, so we'll go back, we'll still get our guy. So it's a positive for Keon Coleman, but it was an odd one. I'll give you that.
Yeah, it really was. You mentioned Ladd McConkey there, and my mind just went, because now, between you and I, we know that I'm a huge fan of McConkey, and I've actually created a song about him. I don't know if we should do this on the
podcast. Come on.
He goes, "Oh, lad, you're so fine, you blow my mind. McConkey, McConkey." And I'm going to sing that every week because he's an absolute star, Luke.
Thank you guys for listening to Turf and Touchdowns. We're not going to do this again. This was just an experiment. It's gone really badly.
I think that's a belter. If anyone can think of a better tune for Ladd McConkey to go in a song, please whack it in the comments on YouTube. I think that's a belter, personally.
You could definitely do the Hokey Cokey.
I could. I don't want to be standing up and doing the Hokey Cokey while singing it, though. So
you could get all your Ladd McConkey friends around in a circle.
Just me, then.
And you can just do the Ladd McConkey. There you go.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll incorporate that for next week.
Yeah, this is where you come to Turf and Touchdowns. You just get analysis that is unparalleled to anywhere else. Even guys that have been doing this for years and years, they're not going to give you this.
They're not going to sing that song, are they?
No. Let's move on to winners of the draft, which I think the main one, the main one was Chicago. I think Chicago absolutely nailed it. Caleb Williams was the obvious pick. We knew they were going to take him. I love it when a team surrounds their quarterback with weapons. They've done that, obviously not in the draft. They did it with DJ Moore last year for Justin Fields. They did it with Keenan Allen. And they've done it as well with Roma Dunze, who they took at pick 9, I think it was. I don't think Caleb Williams can fail. If he does, he might be the biggest bust of all time, but I just don't think he's going to be that guy.
No, he's a generational talent. As much as being a Packers fan, I don't want him to necessarily succeed. I think everything's there for him to really thrive at the Bears right now. And the Bears might actually be good this year, which is quite sad. The NFC North in general should be very good, with the Lions, Packers and the Bears all, you know, having strong rosters. The Vikings will probably be bottom, in my opinion. But as you say, it wasn't just Caleb Williams who went to the Bears. It was Roma Dunze. And actually, and this might be a bit outlandish, I think he's the best wide receiver the Bears currently have. And that's not me criticizing DJ Moore or Keenan Allen by any means, but I think Roma Dunze could easily just leapfrog both of those this year. I think he's going to get a huge target share. I've watched him in college last season. He looked incredible. One more thing about the Bears. The unsung best pick in the draft this year was in round 4, and it was by the Bears. Do you know who it was?
No, go on.
It was punter Torrey Turner. He broke the NCAA record. 85 years it stood for most punting yards in the league. I mean, this guy can kick the ball. And you know what? If there's
That helps for a punter. That does help.
It really does. If you can't, you probably shouldn't be a punter. But if they end up in a 4th and long on their own 20 or their own 10, this guy can get them out of trouble. He can kick it down the other end of the field, and the other team would play in 1st and 10 from their own 10. So, you know, he was a huge selection for the Bears. I think they're going to thrive this year, especially on offense.
Who was the third receiver on the Bears team last year? Stats from a stats perspective, not just on coaching staff.
Was it Darnell Mooney?
It was. 31 catches.
Yeah, poor.
414 yards on 61 targets. So 50% catch rate-ish, around there. massive upgrade. Justin Fields must be absolutely livid because they have surrounded straight away Caleb Williams with just talent upon talent upon talent. They've even got DeAndre Swift come in as well and play running back, which is an upgrade on whatever they had going on last year. Cole Kmet's still there as well. But last year, the Bears had 3,421 passing yards. That's a mix of Fields and Tyson Bagent as well. So Caleb Williams, I don't think he can fail. I think he's going to be a very, very good quarterback for a long time to come. Let's do Ladd McConkey.
Good.
I mean, the whole draft, wide receiver-wise, was generally Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze. But you knew that one of these guys was going to get a good landing spot. Troy Franklin, Ladd McConkey. Xavier Worthy, I thought, found an excellent landing spot. But Ladd McConkey might have got the best of all.
Yeah, I don't actually know about that. I just think the fact he's been drafted to play under Jim Harbaugh suggests he's going to be wide receiver one at a team that didn't really have a wide receiver one. And for him as a person, that's probably the best spot for him because he's going to have lots of targets. He's going to play in every single game and he's going to be the guy they're going to be looking to. The negative is that Harbaugh loves to run the ball and doesn't love to throw the ball. So actually, how much of an effect is he going to have? And is he going to be targeted or even looked at in the red zone? I don't know about that necessarily. What I do know is that Ladd McConkey is a fantastic player. He shouldn't be slept on. If you're a Chargers fan right now, he's going to be doing some big things for you for the long-term future. I'm talking 5-6 years. He's going to be the guy. So yeah, if I was a Chargers fan, I'd be buzzing right now.
Yeah, add in offensive coordinator Greg Roman, who's come in as well. He loves to run the ball. He's brought half of Baltimore with him as well, with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. That's a negative in the immediate future for Ladd McConkey, but they're going to run and run and run. They took Joe Alt, a offensive lineman, in the draft at pick 5 as well, but they could have traded back for quite a bit. There'd have been a fair few teams that wanted to trade up. Just to say, regarding the Chargers, obviously they got rid of like everybody who can catch a ball. Yep. In recent months, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams is now at the Jets. Keenan Allen's at the Bears. Vacated targets. When we speak about vacated targets, these are catches that somebody had on the team last year that are no longer there. So those targets more or less need to go to somebody else. From the wide receiver front alone, 239 wide receiver targets are being vacated. That's 63% of all targets last year on the Chargers. So there is a way in for Ladd McConkey to really find a way, pretty high authority on this team immediately.
Yeah, I hope so. I do. But you have to remember he's a rookie. So it comes down to trust, not necessarily just these guys had these targets last year. So you're likely to see it replicated. I think McConkey may have 6 or 7 targets for the first few weeks. And then as it goes through the season, especially if the Chargers fail to win games or if they get behind in games, he could be seeing 10, 11, 12 targets per game. He's a guy that if you're a punter and you go into anytime markets, he was not a guy I want for anytime touchdown, but he's a guy that I want for overs in receiving yards and catches because he's going to be that person. When the Chargers are on their own 40 and they've got 3rd and 4, he's going to be the guy that grabs them 4 yards. That's who Ladd McConkey is.
Yeah, I fully get that. And he's got, was it Josh Palmer and Quinton Johnston to compete against? I mean, Quinton Johnston looked terrible last year.
Couldn't catch a ball.
He didn't catch anything. I really wanted him to do well. I was really pulling for Quinton Johnston, but he just didn't help himself out at all. We'll move on very quickly to Xavier Worthy. Love this landing spot. As you said earlier on, fastest ever 40-yard dash at the NFL Combine. He's not just that guy, though. He is a deep threat. I imagine the Chiefs are going to use him quite interestingly. And I know it's very lazy to say, but he just feels like they want him to be a Tyreek Hill-type player. If he's half as good as Tyreek Hill was for the Chiefs, he's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, spot on. I think you've nailed that there. He's either going to be all or nothing. The thing with very quick receivers is that they can generally be blowouts. I mean, you're looking at Henry Ruggs, for example, players like him. They can be quite lightweight and therefore get pushed at the line of scrimmage and jolted and therefore not be able to do their routes properly, not be able to run their routes. However, when you're on a team like Kansas with a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you're going to catch long bombs week after week, aren't you? So good spot for him. He's not a guy I would want to be betting on for any kind of line, whether that's receptions, receiving yards, touchdowns, anything, but he's a guy that's going to cause a lot of stirs in the league. I'm looking forward to seeing him on red zone, that's for sure.
How much do you weigh? Do you know in pounds?
Yeah, I know. Go undisclosed.
I think Xavier Worthy is 165.
Yeah, it's about the same as me.
Which is pretty light. I mean, you're quite tall. Xavier Worthy is 5'9", I think it is. He's around that sort of height anyway. But he's also got a chance for early relevance because Rashee Rice, with everything going on with him off field, it looks like he's just facing a long ban. Multi-game is sort of the entry point at the moment. We are learning more about it sort of day by day, but Xavier Worthy could easily be the two as far as wide receivers go in Kansas City early on in the year. Obviously, they brought in Hollywood Brown as well. Tom, give me a draft winner.
The biggest draft winner was the town of Basingstoke, Luke. Now, I know that everyone listening to this is thinking, what is this guy on about? He sung a song about Lad McConkie, now he's talking about Basingstoke.
There is someone at the moment in America thinking, what on earth is a Basingstoke?
Absolutely. I mean, just for some clarity, it is a little town just in southern England where
Little pointless people.
I don't know about
Sorry
that.
To the rest of Basingstoke. That was quite mean. Tom's there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Come on. Yes, but we saw a guy from Basingstoke being drafted in the NFL draft this year, a guy called Travis Clayton. Now, he was playing rugby over in the UK prior to the NFL draft. Never played an NFL game, American football game in his life, but he's been drafted in the sixth round and he's gone to the Buffalo Bills. So huge for him and huge actually, not only for Basingstoke, I was just saying that because I live here, but the international program, seeing these guys come up from whether it be Germany or the UK, gaining a spot on an NFL team and having the chance to really make a career of themselves. I think Travis Clayton, in brackets, Basingstoke, were the biggest winners here.
Yeah, when Travis Clayton was drafted, he did the walk out onto the stage as one of the later picks. And there was a party back in Basingstoke with all his friends. If you just look in the background, Tom was in the corner just on his phone. So you can go Lad McConkie, go Basingstoke. I'm kidding, he wasn't invited to that. He's not cool.
No, I wasn't.
But we do, obviously, as English people ourselves, if our accents weren't enough of a giveaway, we do cheer any success UK-wise in the NFL, albeit not much of it, but there is a massive, massive print being made by UK players in recent years. My other two losers, are we doing losers? No, we're doing winners. My other two winners, Christian Kirk is a big one for me. Love Christian Kirk. I am trying to trade for Christian Kirk anywhere I possibly can in fantasy at the moment. Okay, you go back to 2022, play 17 games, 133 targets. Love that. They got rid of Calvin Ridley, took the money and he's gone to Tennessee. That's great. In the draft, they took Brian Thomas, outside guy. They traded for Gabe Davis, outside guy. Where's Christian Kirk? Not outside. He's inside. He's in the slot for the majority of his routes, pretty much all of them. He's going to go back to being Trevor Lawrence's go-to guy. He's got that job himself. He's going to have so many targets once again. Last year, he saw 85 targets in 12 games. That includes his injury game when he got injured against Cincinnati, where he had one target, one catch at the start, then he got hurt. It includes his first game as well, where he was completely irrelevant. He saw three targets when Calvin Ridley was going off on his comeback. Christian Kirk, Tom, is going to be a big receiver in the NFL this year.
I don't buy it. I do not buy it. If you said anybody else, I may buy it. If you said Brian Thomas was a good pick, maybe.
Brian Thomas was a good pick, but yeah. Christian Kirk will be the wide receiver one for Jacksonville by a long way this year.
This guy has groins made out of string. I mean, he has suffered three groin injuries in his career. Last year, he had a groin injury that kept him out for the rest of the season. It was a hernia, I think. And I don't know. He's just too injury prone for me. Now, obviously, he does play in the slot, so he takes a lot of big hits, but I don't know. He's just untrustworthy for me. Maybe he has a couple of games where he gets 150 yards and two TDs. That wouldn't surprise me. It's the consistency that's my issue. And that's why I don't love Christian Kirk. I do love the Jacksonville Jaguars on offense, though. Sometime they're going to have to thrive. I mean, they've got all the weapons. Is it this year? Who knows?
Well, they need to. Trevor Lawrence is coming up to a contract. Yep. So he's not far away from that. And by the way, the Chargers, 239 vacated targets to wide receivers. How many in Jacksonville?
Quite a lot, to be fair. They played in a lot of shootouts last year. Let's go 280.
239.
Oh, really?
Exactly the same. Exactly the same number. No, exactly the same number. Calvin Ridley obviously being the main guy that's gone, but Christian Kirk's going to be the guy. They are the winners. Any other winners that you wanted to mention?
Nope. All done with winners.
Best fantasy rookies. I mean, we won't spend much time on it, but Marvin Harrison, obviously, he's gone to Arizona. He's going to be wide receiver one there. He's got Kyler Murray supporting him. He was taken fourth. Arizona didn't trade back. Full of positives, and he looks to be one of the best prospects to come into the NFL in a long, long time.
Yeah, for sure. Marvin Harrison will be that guy. He'll be a top five receiver this year, even though he's a rookie, I think, providing he stays injury-free, of course, over the season. But yeah, good pick. It was a very obvious pick. And if you can get him in fantasy, why wouldn't you snap him up?
Congrats on having the 101.
Yeah, exactly.
in dynasty drafts. Caleb Williams as well. We're not going to spend time on that because you guys know that Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison are very good at football. Give me one of your best fantasy rookies for this year.
I'm going to give you them both. I'm going to do it in a double header, and I'll tell you why. Because these are two offensive players that last year, during the college season, I was thinking the whole way through, we need these guys in the NFL. They would mix it up. And these guys are the two biggest powerhouse players, the guys that could produce huge plays and produce consistent performances away from Marvin Harrison this season. Malik Nabers being one. And here's a statement for you. I reckon he's going to get 115 catches this year. Not just 100, 115. And I know he plays for the Giants. I know he plays for the Giants. But they've got to throw to someone. And Malik Nabers is open on virtually every single one of his routes. Now, going into the NFL is slightly different to playing in college. Of course, you're facing better defenses. But this guy can get open every single time. I think he's going to be their fullback guy. I think he's going to go off this year. And if you can get him in fantasy, you're going to have to use a high pick, but I would definitely take him. I'd also look for Malik Nabers in any time touchdown scorer markets in virtually every game the Giants played this season. I think he's going to be dynamite. Now, the other is Brock Bowers. Again, he's not exactly left field, but we're going to come to sleepers in a second. If you don't know what sleepers means, it's a term for players that may be overlooked. These are the best rookies, and I think Brock Bowers is definitely going to be one of them. He is a top three tight end in the NFL already, just moving straight into the NFL and becoming one of the best. I mean, you've got Travis Kelce, you've got TJ Hockenson, you've definitely got Sam Laporta, but I think Brock Bowers is already up there with those players. And look, I don't love the spot where he landed himself in. It should have been a top 10 pick, but he could easily become a Rob Gronkowski in the future. He could become a Travis Kelce from 2 years ago. This guy just catches the ball, gains separation, and he's very hard to tackle.
I was going to counter your Malik Nabers point by saying, yeah, but who's going to be thrown to him? And I remember that they picked up Drew Lock.
Yeah, your favourite guy.
Love Drew Lock. He's a big fan. Moving on to, one more. We mentioned him earlier on, Xavier Worthy, I think is going to be a very key fantasy rookie for this year. Like I say, Rashee Rice is going to be out for a period of time. How long at the moment? We don't know, but Xavier Worthy, I think, is going to be very good for the Chiefs. He might even be very good from day one as well. Really excited to see what he can put forward. Fantasy sleepers, rookie side of things. Trey Benson, I'm going to put forward. He was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals. Wasn't expecting him to go to Arizona at all, but I do like that landing spot. James Conner was just the workhorse for Arizona last year. He was fantastic as well. But even at the back end of the year, when other guys came in, they picked up Michael Carter from the Jets. Michael Carter, look, he's not the guy. We saw that in New York, but he did pretty well as a backup and a fill-in for James Conner. James Conner always gets hurt at some point. Running backs always get hurt at some point of the year. Trey Benson, when he manages to take over at some point, even if it is just for a week or two, watch out for him because he's going to do very, very well. Is Trey Benson one of the leading running backs in this draft, and he goes to a good team. Give me a sleeper, Tom.
I didn't love the running back draft, running back group. I didn't love the tight end group aside from Brock Bowers. So I had to really go wide receiver. I mean, you don't really get rookie QB sleepers. That wouldn't really work. So I had to go wide receiver. Two names jump out. I'll give you one to start with. And that's Jalen McMillan. He's gone to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They picked him in the third round. So they have relatively high hopes for him. They gave up a reasonable draft pick to pick up McMillan. And this is a guy who last year proved himself to be a top-level receiver in college football. Now, you do need to make that jump up. But I like the spot for him at Tampa. They're a very pass-heavy team. And this is a team that's going to be without their receivers looking forward. So if you play Dynasty football, Dynasty fantasy, then he's a guy you want to be picking up in the middle rounds. You know, Mike Evans is currently there, but he can't go on forever. Then you have the likes of Chris Godwin, who is a slot guy. He gets injured quite a lot. I don't know. He's not really reliable. They have Trey Palmer, who was a very good last year as a rookie, but I think Jalen McMillan is going to be the guy to really have a big year, maybe next season, and just introduce himself on the stage this term.
Yeah, that is a second Washington Husky that you've mentioned.
It is. Yeah, Washington, okay. I mean, they were the second-ranked team last year. They went 13-0 in the regular season. They won the semifinal before losing in the College Football National Championship. So they're a good team. They're full of good players. Now that they're going into the NFL, you have to consider that. You know, these aren't guys just coming out of middle schools. They're coming out of one of the best schools in college football.
Yeah, Tampa love Huskies as well, by the way. I think Tampa have drafted the most Huskies in the last 10 years or so, Vita Vea being their main one a few years back, which he's been a big success. Obviously, has been hurt, but he's a big dude. Ricky Pearsall, I'll mention as a sleeper. You do have to watch what San Francisco are doing, but Ricky Pearsall was taken by San Francisco before anyone else. You were thinking they were going to go away from the wide receiver position, but they picked up Ricky Pearsall. I wonder what Brandon Ayuk is going to do, because he has said that he wants out. I think he's just trying to get the bag of money, to be quite frank, from San Francisco. I don't necessarily think Brandon Ayuk will leave San Francisco. I think it's a perfect spot for him. He thrives there. He's done very well. But monitor it. If he leaves, Ricky Pearsall could have a way in to potentially be number two behind Debo Samuel. That would be massive, getting that on a Kyle Shanahan offense as a rookie. And I'll throw in Blake Corum as well. He's joined the Rams. Obviously, someone needs to slot in behind Kyron Williams. Sean McVay does love having one guy. He's been that way for a long time, even going back, I mean, with the Rams, like the likes of Todd Gurley. They like having one workhorse back. Darrell Henderson as well, a few years ago. But if Blake Corum could work his way in, he was a guy that slipped down in the draft quite significantly. Again, he's gone to a good team. If Kyron misses time at any point in the season, Blake Corum could be a guy that becomes relevant sooner rather than later. There, my sleeper's done. Did you have any others, or was your list complete as well?
Just one, and that is Troy Franklin. He's in Denver right now. Now, Denver could be a spot for Brandon Ayuk, so that trends in nicely with what you were saying about Ricky Pearsall there. So watch out for Ayuk. If he stays in San Fran, that's good for Troy Franklin. If he goes to Denver, that's not. But the fact he was drafted by Denver allows him to continue his relationship with quarterback Bo Nix, who was also taken by Denver in this draft. Both Oregon Ducks, they know each other very well. Denver's not a spot where you're going to see a receiver really go off. He's not going to be a top three or four receiver this year, or probably in the future with this current way of running things from the GM and head coach. But he's a guy that's going to get a target share. And, you know, Troy Franklin's probably a third or fourth round draft pick if you're in a dynasty league, or obviously a lot further down if you're in a redraft. So he could be a guy to pick up with a lower pick if you're just thinking, God, I don't know any of these people. Troy Franklin's the man.
Yeah, totally get that. He's another guy that potentially could be a fairly early usage rookie. But that's a look at the NFL draft. Obviously, there will be a lot more to come in the next few weeks, and we're going to start hearing about a few of these teams as well, because some of their practices have already started, albeit it's the optional ones at the moment. But that is episode one of Turf and Touchdowns in the book. Thank you very much for being with us. Just a reminder, if you enjoyed the episode, leave a like, comment, subscription, anything that you can possibly do to help us, that would be absolutely fantastic. And also let us know what you would like to see going forward. If you want to see more fantasy stuff on the NFL side of things, if you want to see more US racing stuff, which we're going to be doing anyway, but any recommendations, anything that you want to see, please do let us know. And on the social front, on Twitter/X, we are at Turf Touchdowns. Any other social media platform, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, here, YouTube, that counts. We are at Turf and Touchdowns. You can listen to us wherever you possibly want as well, Apple or on Spotify. But like I say, please do leave us a few nice reviews and any comments. They are all appreciated. But Tom, episode one in the books.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed that. Obviously, this was quite a long episode. I don't think we'll be as long on our podcast episodes moving forward. But we were trying to cover two big sports and two big sporting moments all in one. So hopefully it didn't drag too long for you and you still enjoyed it. Look forward to next week, Luke. Got a couple of US races to talk about for sure.
We do, absolutely so. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. Until we next see you here on Turf and Touchdowns, stay safe, look after another. Goodbye.